Christmas has its share of unexpected characters. An unwed teenage mother, a trusting fiance, an unconcerned innkeeper, the stable animal trough, dirty, ritualistically unclean shepherds. And they're unexpected because this was God's entrance into our world. You would expect it to be better. You'd expect it to be different. You'd expect dignitaries and crowds and bands and royalty and paparazzi. He's the long-awaited Messiah. He's Emmanuel. He is the Prince of Peace that's coming among us. You would expect better. And you'd expect his arrival to be peaceful. I mean, we sing about that. Silent night. All is calm. All is bright. But then we start reading the Christmas story, and a villain appears. There's no peace at all. Perhaps the most unexpected character of the Christmas narrative is a king. The unexpected king of the Christmas story is King Herod. And what a wicked, evil villain he was. Read with me his story, Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men came from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ child was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. Opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother, and by night departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." And then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious and sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that had ascertained from the wise men. And then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. "A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping in loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because they are no more." I want us to tell you, or I want us to see Herod's story this morning. King Herod, the king of Christmas. First of all, letter A on your outline about Herod himself. It's interesting to find out who he was. He was born about 67 years before Jesus. So whenever Jesus was born, he was about 67 years old, roughly. He was raised in the country of Edomia, which is really Edom in the Bible. Today, it's the modern-day Jordan. Edom had always been enemies of Israel. Israel, of course, with Jacob lineage, and Edom with Esau's lineage, and always just a natural rivalry between Edom and Israel, and Herod was from Edom. But he wanted to make the Jews think he was one of them. His mother was an Arabian princess. If she was Nabataean by tribe. Nabataeans, by the way, if you've been to Petra in Jordan, the Nabataeans are the ones that built the beautiful structures of Petra. So she was a Nabataean princess, and his dad, by the name of Antipater, was an Edomite, but he converted to Judaism because it helped his political career, helped his business. So you could do that in those days. You could convert. So Herod said, oh, well, I'm Jewish. My dad's Jewish. Well, he was only Jewish for political reasons. Herod was not really liked very much at all by anybody. He hobnobbed with the Roman leaders, and he was friends with Mark Antony and Octavian and Caesar Augustus. And because his dad had political connections, Herod hobnobbed with all the big shots in the Roman Empire, and they didn't like him. They just kind of tolerated Herod. He was always a wannabe. And so he wanted to be in charge. He wanted to be a leader of some group of people. So the Roman official said, okay, we will give you small little backwater portion of the empire that's really not that important, and we'll just let you take care of it. It's a place called Judea among the Jews. The Jews are these backwater people, and they're kind of hicks, and, well, Judea's not, it's nothing in the empire, so we'll put Herod over Judea. So in 37 BC, he was given the title governor of Judea, and they gave him the title also Herod, king of the Jews. And they gave him one task: don't mess it up. Keep it quiet. Everything quiet. Don't let there be no uprising. We don't want to hear from the Jews. We don't want anything going on. You keep it peaceful. And so Herod started out to do just that. Herod was known for two things. Number one, he was known as a builder. He was a good builder. In fact, he was an architectural genius. His structures, even to this day, are amazing. Whenever we go to Israel, we always land at the airport. We were always tired. We go to the hotel, spend the rest of the night, rest up. And then the very next morning, early in the morning, our very first stop is a place called the Mediterranean Sea called Caesarea Maritima, Caesarea by the sea. And it was this summer resort that Herod built that was fabulous. I mean, it was state of the art. It was amazing. It had a natural harbor. It had bathhouses. It was amazing how he put it together. But that wasn't all. He also built Masada. We go another day to Masada, this beautiful palace and fortress out in the middle of the desert. And then he built Herodium, which is another palace in the West Bank. Beautiful structure. He was an architectural genius. Oh, and then there's the temple. Solomon's temple was pretty. But Herod came in wanting to curry favor with the Jews, and he made the temple even outstanding, more outstanding. It was stunning, and they loved Herod's temple, but the Jews despised Herod. He taxed them heavily for all these projects, and so their taxes are very large. But there was another reason the Jews hated Herod. You see, Herod always pretended to be one of them. He wasn't Jewish, wasn't born Jewish. He was only Jewish because his dad converted for political reasons. And so the Jews always resented Herod for trying to act like a Jew when he really wasn't. And so he really played the Jewish game really well. I mean, he went through all the dietary regulations. He would not eat pork. He would eat only kosher foods like the Jews. All of his beautiful structures, he would put a copy of the Ten Commandments up in them. He wanted to pretend to be Jewish to curry the favor of the Jews, but the Jews saw right through it. So then he thought, what else can I do to make them think I'm one of them? So he decided to marry into the most famous Jewish family, the Hasmonean dynasty. So he found a beautiful woman called Mariamne, and he married Mariamne. Now, he was married at the time, so he banished his wife and banished his son with that wife, And he married Mary Omni, so he would be of the Hasmonean dynasty, the most famous Jewish family. It would be like someone marrying into the Rockefeller family or the Kennedy family in America or the Bush family. And you marry in, well, you're truly American if you marry into those families. It was the same with the Jews. And so he married into the Hasmonean dynasty. Despite all of that, the Jews despised Herod. He's a wannabe. He was known for another thing. Two things. He's known for his buildings, but he's also known for his brutality. Herod was a mean man, vicious, cruel, brutal, killed without even thinking about it. If you crossed him in any way, he killed you. Off with your head. He was extremely paranoid. He always thought somebody's out there trying to take his kingdom, or someone's always trying to undermine him, somebody's trying to take his money. So he's extremely paranoid. And so he had a bodyguard. Well, he didn't have one bodyguard. He had 2,000 bodyguards that walked with him every day wherever he went, because he was afraid somebody was out there trying to get his kingdom. If they found that they were, he would cut their heads off. He also had spies among all the people. And you don't know who they were. They were undercover, plain clothes. But if they were his spies, and if they heard you talk badly about Herod, your head went off. Or if they thought in any way you might be trying to connive, to take something he had, he cut your head off. Just a great guy you want to invite to a Christmas party. Anybody who opposed him or was a threat, he had them executed. When he married Mary Omni, all the other male suitors that could have married her in the Hasmonean dynasty, he had them executed. His mother-in-law was kind of a meddling mother-in-law, so he had her executed. That's not an option, by the way, but that's what Herod did. Mary Omni's brother he didn't like, so he had her brother killed. Mary Omni had 2 other children by her previous marriage. He had both of them killed. He had her grandfather killed. He killed 3 of his own sons. Herod realized his sons were trying to overthrow his kingdom and take charge. So he executed his own 3 sons he had with Mary Omni. In fact, the phrase became popular, it's more safe to be Herod's pig than Herod's son. Because you see, he didn't eat pork, so he wouldn't kill the pigs. Safer to be his pig. He loved Mary Omni, but he found out she was trying to take his money. So he had her executed. Overall, he married 10 women. He killed them all. NBC Dateline would have loved him. You know those stories on there? Killed his brother-in-law. Tried to kill his own brother. But natural causes beat him to it. He executed the drop of a hat. And it is this Herod God had enter the Christmas story. So look at letter B on your outline. His attempt to destroy the Christ child. Sometime after Jesus was born in the manger, the Bible tells us that a star appeared in the east, and there were magi there. We call them wise men, probably in Persia, 800 or 900 miles away from Jesus. So it wasn't the same day that Jesus was born. This was later. They saw a star in the east, and they saw the star lead them, saying, "A child has been born, and so go to the child and worship the child and bring the child gifts." So they saw the star, they rejoiced, they started heading that way. We don't know how much longer after Jesus was born that the wise men showed up. I know, you see them at manger scenes. They weren't at the manger. Some say 12 days later, some say 40 days later. Some say up to 2 years later, but if you're riding a camel for 900 miles, you're not going to be there the next day. It took a while. So by the time they got there, Jesus and his parents are now in a house. They're not in the manger, they're in a house. And they arrive in Bethlehem, and the first person that the Magi go to is King Herod. Guess what they tell him? Oh, we saw this star in the sky, and we heard there's a new king. Excuse me? Yeah, there's a new king in town. Really, where did you hear this? We saw it, a star appeared, and there's a new king. In fact, his name is King of the Jews. That's my name. Where is this child? So Herod secretly went over to the scribes and all the priests. He didn't know anything about the Bible. So he asked them, where in the Bible does it say the Messiah is coming? And they showed him, well, the prophet Micah. Well, where? Where is he going to be born? He's going to be born in Bethlehem. Let's just ride the road. So he went back to the Magi, Herod did, and said, okay, you go to Bethlehem and you find where this Christ child is. And whenever you find him, you be sure and come back this way and tell me where he is, because I want to worship him too. No, he wanted to cut his head off. The Magi, sure thing, see you, king. And they left. And the Bible said they found him at home, walked in, saw the Christ child with Mary and Joseph, and they fell down and worshiped him and brought him expensive gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. By the way, folks, that's the exact same response we should have whenever we encounter the Christ child. Fall down, worship, give him our best, and give him our lives. So they started to go back to tell Herod where Jesus was, and an angel appeared. He said, guys, listen, don't go back Herod's way. Don't go back and tell Herod where the child is. He wants to kill him. You go the other way and go back home the other way, not by Herod's way. That's to fulfill prophecy. And then also God appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, Joseph, take the child Jesus and take Mary. Go to Egypt and you stay there until Herod dies. After Herod dies, I will appear to you again. You come back to Israel and raise him in Nazareth. So according to fulfill prophecy, Hosea 11:1, my child should be called out of Egypt. Joseph and Mary took the child and they went down to Egypt, 300 miles or so, journeyed down to Egypt and stayed there until Herod died. By the way, that's only one of about 300 different prophecies that Jesus himself fulfilled. The Messiah has to be Jesus. It can't be anyone else. Jesus fulfilled about 300 of those prophecies. Well, the Magi went home and didn't go back, and there is King Herod patiently waiting to find out where the Christ child is. And he waits, and he waits, and he waits, and they don't show up. And King Herod realized he had been duped. He had been tricked. The wise men came one way but went home another way. And Herod, the Bible tells us, was furious. And he said, you will not trick King Herod. I'll find him. I'll find him on my own. And he gave the order for all of his soldiers to go all throughout Bethlehem, every home that had a 2-year-old child and under, break into the home and execute that child. Folks, how brutal. What a horrible, brutal genocide of the most innocent among us. 2-year-olds and under. It's called the Massacre of the Innocents. Can you imagine? I don't know why we don't talk about this in the genocides of history. Why isn't this ever mentioned? Can you imagine? You're a Jewish family. You have a little toddler. It's a normal night. You have a fire going, and he's playing on the living room floor, and everything's calm. And all of a sudden, someone bursts through the door. It's a soldier, and he grabs your two-year-old and whisks him away, and you never see him again. Or worse, executes him in front of you. Imagine. And this happened to every home throughout Bethlehem that had a two-year-old child or under. By the time a child reaches 2 years old, their personalities are apparent. They recognize parents. They respond to their name. They follow a command, put the cup on the table. They do. They can speak two-word sentences. All gone. Me sleep. They can point to objects and name them. They can pretend with stuffed animals. They can get objects from another room. They can point to objects and identify them. They can say mommy and daddy. And folks, it was those kids that they brutally executed trying to find the Christ child. What kind of man would do that? Well, as you can imagine, grief and weeping all throughout Judea. I mean, wailing in the middle of the night at children being killed. Matthew said, this fulfilled Jeremiah's prophecy from the Old Testament that said, a voice was heard in Ramah weeping in loud lamentation. Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because the children were no more. All the awful, evil actions of a king only wanting one thing, kill the Christ child because he's a threat. So I want us to go to the last point, letter C on your outline, the spirit of Herod lives. Bad news I have for you today. Herod's spirit did not die when he died. It's alive today. It's alive and well. You've seen it. I'll tell you in a moment. Herod, right after the massacre of the innocents, began to get sick. He contracted we don't know what the disease was. It was a flesh-eating bacteria. It was a very slow, painful death. It was an excruciatingly painful death. We don't know what it was. There are theories. Some say kidney problems. We don't really know what it was. In fact, scholars just say it's called Herod's evil. That's the name of the disease. Herod's evil. Josephus, writer of Antiquities of the Jews, wrote this about Herod's death. Quote, he was in severe pain. He suffered terribly. His body was eaten away. His breath smelled like a decaying corpse. He had severe halitosis. His private parts became gangrened and putrefied with a maggot infestation. End quote. It was an awful death for an awful man. Perhaps God reserved the worst kind of death for the worst kind of man. It took a long time for him to die, according to historians. He tried to commit suicide in the middle of it by stabbing himself, and his cousin stopped him. As his death approached, he knew that no one would be sad for him to go. So he made a decree. On the day he dies, he wants all the leading men of Jericho executed on the same day he does, so at least somebody will cry on the day he dies. His family did not carry that out, by the way, but that was his wishes. And sometime around 4 BC, Herod died. And an angel appeared to Joseph and Mary in Egypt and said, you can come back to Israel. And Mary and Joseph brought the child back to Nazareth and raised him. But even though Herod died, his spirit is still alive. It's alive in the power that you see that goes on in our world and the awful evil actions that are done to keep power. You see Herod alive in business, in politics, in personal relationships. You see Herod alive in jealousy in churches and those wanting control. Hostility toward one another, anger, you see Herod. The inhumane actions one human being takes toward another human being and the fear that causes you to do unconscionable things is alive and well whenever you see that in our culture. And in our society, you see an ongoing clash between good and evil and light and darkness. And whenever you see that, it's the spirit of Herod that's still there. In fact, there are still attempts today to destroy the Christ child. Did you know that? To devalue Christianity, to minimize the gospel message, to eradicate Christianity from the public square in our culture. That spirit of Herod is still there trying to get rid of the Christ child. So you see it. Taking Christ out of Christmas. You see it whenever you can't even mention the name Jesus or mention the name Christian in many circles, in many schools. You can't do that. In cities, city governments, city halls, all trying to erase Christ out of the public square. It's Herod's spirit trying to get rid of the baby. You see, Christianity to a lot of people is viewed as a privileged white religion. So it must be eradicated in favor of the marginalized, and that's the image. So you see in the media and through entertainers, social media, you see on our university campuses all attempts to get rid of the Christ child. And you hear politicians angry, expletive-laced messages against the Christian message, trying to silence it. All akin to the spirit of Herod. And the killing of the innocents. Christians around the world are being brutally killed. 4,476 people died last year worldwide for no other reason but they bore the name of Christ. 4,476. 4,700 were in prison for no other reason. The Christians. 7,600 churches were attacked worldwide last year. Some burned, all because they bear the name Christ. You see, Herod's alive. He's still at work. 380 million people, Christians worldwide, are in danger of high-level persecution this morning. We're not. They are. One out of every five Christians in Africa, two out of every five Christians in Asia are right in the line of fire of being persecuted only because they're Christian, and that's all. North Korea, Somalia, Libya, Yemen, Nigeria, Pakistan, Sudan, Iran, those are the top eight. You see, whenever they buried Herod, they didn't bury his spirit. With us. As you think about Herod and Jesus, a couple of things come to mind. Whenever Herod died and all the opulent wealth he left behind, all that's left are these dusty, rock-covered palaces that you occasionally have archaeologists a part of. No hospitals were ever named after Herod that I know of. No colleges, no universities, no charities. His picture does not adorn our homes. His manner of death is not worn as a necklace around our necks. He is not worshipped. In fact, if I hadn't told you about him, or if he wasn't in the Christmas story, you probably would have never even known him. On the other hand, there's Jesus. Born in a hay trough while Herod had choices of many palace beds. And Jesus' parents had to scurry and flee from Herod like ants from an anthill. But now, Herod is dead, and Jesus is alive. Many hospitals named after Jesus, charities, colleges and universities bear his name. Billions of people around throughout history have revered his name, worshipped him, memorized his sayings, parsed every word he said. Printings and symbols and paintings. And the reason we're here this morning is not because of Herod. It's because of Jesus. Their lives in different directions. Oh, by the way, Jesus and Herod never met. But they will. An old Anglican priest by the name of Malcolm Guyatt, he's an Anglican British priest, put their meeting into a sonnet. And he said this: "Every Herod dies and then comes alone to stand before the Lamb on the throne." Herod will stand before God and give an account. But so will we. Father, I want to thank you today for the message that you've given to us about King Herod. And Lord, I know that he's not the main part of the Christmas story, but Lord, he is one that we often gloss over and fail to recognize that he's still with us today. Lord, I pray that every one of us, whenever we encounter the Herod spirit, that God, we will recognize it in the voices of those people who angrily shout against Christ. Those people trying, Lord, to devalue the Christian message or minimize the Christian gospel. Or those just trying to eradicate it from the public square. God, may we recognize the spirit of Herod. And I thank you for the Christ child and all that he's done. Lord, the season's about him. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Stand again.